The Daily Connect podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Oh, hello. Yes, it's Friday on the Daily Connect podcast, the 10th of August, 2018. Great to have your company. Today on the podcast, we look back at our week of coverage on shared spaces and invite your thoughts as we wrap up the conversation. Well, for now, you'll hear from the many voices who contributed to this week's programme and find out how you can continue to lend your voice to the campaign that's ongoing around the UK to stop such schemes. Also, it's Friday, which means our panel get together to discuss the big issues for blind and partially sighted people. And if that's not enough for you, well, we also tell you about a new charity that was launched to help blind and partially sighted people in the southwest of England. It's not long happened. And something for the weekend. Robert Kirkwood joined me in the studio to give us an update on what's happening this weekend on TV, in the cinema, and at the theatre as well. That's all coming up.
The Daily Connect podcast.
But first on the podcast today, we go back to our forum, our regular discussion on a Friday, where we get people around a table and we talk about all kinds of different issues. Joining me today, David Hogg, who is the host of A Little Alternative on RNIB Connect Radio, and Red Sail, who hosts our Read On book programme. It's a great show. Both of them are, actually. Both David and Red join me now on the podcast. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Right, let's get into the forum this week. Lots of topics to discuss. And the first one up that I want to put to you both is a subject which is a little bit close to my heart, which is why I brought this one up. So it's a bit personal to me. And I have a feeling, I feel the sympathy and love. I wonder if this is the same for you guys. Admitting our sight loss. And the question I'm posing to you guys is it difficult to, and I use this phrase in quotes, come out as blind or partially sighted to the general public, to friends, family, whoever? And what is the feeling once it happens? Or is it a secret that you desperately want to keep quiet? Red Sail, start us off on this one.
I found out that I had retinitis pigmentosa when I was at university. So whilst my family told all the other family members and it spread round the village in Sussex that I was going to be a blind person, I actually really didn't want to let people know at university, which obviously was away from home. So I did cover it up for quite a long time. I just wanted to be, in inverted commas, normal like everybody else. So I didn't take the white cane that was on offer. I hid the audio books. And yeah, I think I probably spent the next 20 years wandering around and bumping into things and people, and apologising and people assuming that I was drunk or on day release. And then I reached this decision that on my 35th birthday, I would actually start using a white cane during the day. And the butcher, of all people, in my part of London, came up to me and went, "Oh, thank God for that. I'm sick and tired of seeing you wandering around, bumping into things. I really worry about you. Thank God you've come out." And he used exactly that word.
That's interesting.
And my life has been easier ever since because people actually get out of my way with a white cane.
And how did that feel? I mean, when that happened, when he said to you, "Oh, I'm so glad you're using this white cane. It's about time." What was that like for you? Was that an ease in your consciousness, or?
It was the first day I'd actually walked down my road with a white cane in daylight, and I was really, really bricking it, to be honest. I was afraid that people were going to laugh or say, "What's the difference between today and yesterday?" Mm. And actually, yeah, I was hugely relieved. And I thought, if this bloody great man with his red face and his apron and his meat cleaver can come round and say, "Yeah, well done, mate," then I feel a lot more equal to the world. And I haven't looked back since. Actually, I felt a lot more comfortable, felt a lot more in charge of my own blindness since that day 13, 14 years ago.
Wow. Okay. Wow. David, what do you take of that?
Well, I've had a visual impairment since I was born, so I've never really had to come out. It's just always something that I've known. But you know, there's a time when you're about 7 or 8, and that goes on till you're about 14. That's, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just the same as everybody else. Anyway, that might just be at that stage in life, you're a obnoxious little ball of hate. But then once you grow older and you sort of realise that, oh, I can get on buses for nothing, I can get to the front at gigs, you know, there are perks to this, you do start using it to your advantage, which happened for me when I was about, I don't know, maybe 15, 16. And then since then, just, yeah, why not? It's not anything that I can change, so why hide it?
So, but when you say why hide it, I mean, do you go out of your way to tell people about it? Or, because I guess I have to ask you both the question that, a lot of blind people would assume of, sighted people, I should say, would assume of us. And that is, I'll put it in a question. Do you look blind, both of you? I mean, do you? I mean, I get told I don't. So what about you?
I'm always being told, oh, you don't look blind. Actually, more recently, I've started wearing dark glasses, especially because it's been such a bright summer. And people now do assume that the white stick and the dark glasses go together and that perhaps I might really be blind. But yeah, no, I know where to look on people's faces because, of course, you know, for the best part of 30 years, I could see their faces. So yeah, no, if I'm at a party, somebody hasn't met me before, I haven't got the cane, and I'm sober, then people assume that I am actually sighted. Yeah. And then it comes as a disappointment. No, but
I've only ever been told once that I don't look blind, and it was a birthday dinner for an ex-girlfriend, and I think her auntie looked over the table at me and went, "You don't look blind." To which I just went, "Thank you." So,
what is the right response to that? That's what I often wonder. What do you say?
Thank you. Make them feel as awkward as it makes you. it's not a thing that I often bring up unless I kind of have to. Like, I've always got my blind certificate in my wallet. So if I ever need it, then I just usually show them that compared to, you know, I don't have a dog or a cane or dark glasses or anything, so I just carry about that.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I've got the cane. Well, I can't leave the house without it nowadays. So I just, yeah, rather than the blind certificate, I just sort of wave this around and say, you know, this isn't for Fred Astaire impressions. It's actually, you know, to get me across the road.
Is it?
So it's quite, I don't know, I suppose there's part of me that still kicks against the fact that, you know, I'm still a sighted person in a blind body, so there's part of me that is a little bit flattered when people go, oh, you don't look blind, but it's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of residual sighted person's prejudice, I suppose.
Yeah.
But does it point to the answer, perhaps, to that question, what is blind? What does blind look like? Because I often think that the impression people have is where we perhaps... I've had a situation recently with myself where, you know, a friend of mine said, oh, today you looked blind. And that gave me a bit of an insight into what that meant. And it was when I had gone into his new flat and I had never been there before. It was a new environment and I was struggling to find my way around. And even just sort of trailing my hand around the edge of the sofa or whatever it was and, you know, knocking a table over or whatever it was I did within the first 5 minutes of being there, as I often do. It's a party trick of mine. But destroy their furniture. But that was, for me, or for them, actually, a bit of a wake-up call, yeah. A sense of, well, around your house or around your office, you can zoom around and do whatever you do because I know the layout. The problem is, until that layout changes or we're in a new environment, you don't really see what it really is like to have a visual impairment.
No.
Is that the same for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you take time to adapt. You know, I remember when I was going from high school to uni, like, when was it, a year ago? Yeah, a year ago. And it's like, oh God, this is terrifying because, you know, going to uni in Edinburgh, where I'm spending, you know, the vast majority of all my life in East Kilbride, which is tiny compared to Edinburgh. So it's, but you do just adapt over time, and that's really all you can do.
Yeah, and I think that's it, isn't it? That actually we are incredibly good problem solvers. If you have to get around in a sighted world when you can't use your eyes properly, you learn how to avoid having accidents. You learn how to use your ears and your hands to sort of guide yourself around. And the one time it really shows up is if we have to go to somewhere new.
Yeah.
But usually within half an hour, you've worked out how to get backwards and forwards to the loo without destroying the furniture or assaulting whoever's wife or girlfriend, and you make it, and then people forget. And yeah, I still have friends sort of handing me a cup of tea without telling me and going, oh, I forgot. Yeah, here's the cup of tea, and guiding my hand towards it. And these are people who've known me for 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't think we cover up. I think people just don't, people forget because we are good at adapting.
And, okay. You know, just as people, there is more to us than a visual impairment. You know, it's not an all-encompassing thing. You know, of course people forget.
I forget sometimes, don't you, David? It's just like, every so often I'll sort of stick my hand out to where I thought my pint glass was and knock it flying because I forget they can't see it.
Yeah, that happens for me, but it's not the impairment. It is an impairment. It's an impairment in one sense.
Alcoholic impairment, yeah.
Well, stick around for part two and three of the forum. We'll be discussing the issue of, how can I put this? Being ignored when you're out and about in public. Maybe you're with your wife, say, and your wife is sighted, and everybody talks to her but not you because you're blind. They don't speak to you. They speak to the person standing next to you. Does it happen to you? Well, it certainly happened to David and Red, and we'll hear their thoughts on that as we continue the forum later.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, this week on The Daily Connect, we've been talking about shared spaces and a number of campaigns that are ongoing around the UK to encourage towns and city planners not to build them into town centre design. Well, first up this week, we met Sarah Gayton, who is a member of the charity National Federation of the Blind in the UK. She told Basil Oxtoby what these schemes are and why they're bad for blind people.
Shared space is simply where they take the curb away or significantly lower that curb. So blind people using a white cane or using a guide dog, the curb disappears, so you can't actually use that space. It becomes very scary and a lot of people just stop going into those areas. They also take away control crossings and either put a courtesy crossing in place that has none of the features like the bleep, the push button or the cone underneath to let you know when it's your turn to cross that street. Sometimes they put zebra crossings in as well, but again, as we know, these are still not good enough for a blind person to truly know when it's their turn to cross a busy road.
For people that are listening, including me, that might not know, courtesy crossing.
Exactly. What is a courtesy crossing? It has nothing to tell you when to cross. It will have a small row of tactile, and that's about it. So there's nothing to tell the vehicle. It has no legal obligation to stop, and you have to make the choice if you want to cross that road or not.
Sarah Gayton there. Now, the UK government has just recently announced a halt to any further schemes being built in England and Wales. And while that's a huge success for campaigners, it might be too late for some. Claire got in touch with us. She is in Cirencester. And she told me how shared spaces in her town centre has changed her experience of just going out for a walk.
Cirencester is a lovely market town, Roman origins, capital of the Cotswolds and so on. But it's become a no-go area, at least the marketplace, which is the main sort of attractive area of the middle of Cirencester for many blind, partially sighted, sensory impaired people, as well as mums with prams, wheelchair users, because it's become a bit of a free-for-all. What's quite difficult is that the planning people and the town council won't call it shared space, but in fact it is, because you've got that takeaway of the delineation between the pavement and the road. So you've got areas where there are no curbs at all, and people and traffic in the same area, which is really frightening if you're a partially sighted person like me with a guide dog. The intention apparently was to make it less traffic going through, better traffic flow, and the idea was for motorists to kind of slow down and look out for pedestrians. Now, I used to be a motorist not very long ago, and I also used to cycle. And the effect is actually that motorists get very irritated and confused.
Now, while it's clear that the campaign will continue to reverse already existing schemes in England and Wales, the battle to call a halt to the schemes overall continues in Scotland, as the government there has not yet called a halt. Sandy Taylor campaigns for National Federation of the Blind in Scotland and told me this week how he has been working to change the government's mind there.
Following my petition back in December 2015, where I called for a moratorium, as a result of that, we had a seminar back in April of last year, and we've followed that on. I am part of a working group. We're looking at rewriting the guidelines that the Scottish government give to local councils. And that is going out to tender at the moment, looking for further research into shared space. Now, the UK government, I believe, are now embarking on a similar route, but they have taken the decision to have a moratorium, whereas we're still waiting in Scotland doing that.
Sandy Taylor there. Now, we got a response from the Scottish government regarding this. We asked them to come on and talk about their position on shared space design. They declined an interview, but sent us this response.
We recognise the concerns people have on shared space. We are clear that the emphasis needs to be on creating safe and inclusive streets involving local people in the design process, including vulnerable road users, when designing what streets should look like. We are looking again at national guidance in this area and consider changes that further support inclusive design, and are working in collaboration with key groups, including organisations representing visually impaired people. Background. Officials across Transport Scotland and Scottish Government have been working with stakeholders as part of a working group to look at inclusive street design with a view to developing future guidance. The working group has agreed a focus on inclusive design, ensuring that streets are safe, attractive, and fully accessible. The group met in May and agreed that research should be commissioned to look at current barriers and good practice to help inform any revision of guidance. As part of this work, we are currently developing a tender specification, and once completed, this research will inform the development of amended or new guidance on inclusive town centres for all.
The National Federation of the Blind is continuing its campaign all across the UK, and Sarah Gayton is asking for all of us to get involved.
There's been a significant amount of evidence that's already been submitted to the Women and Equalities Report and to the Draft Accessibility Action Plan. But I know there'll be people out there that probably didn't even hear about those inquiries going on. So what I would really like is that if anybody else has got any stories where they can't access their town centres or have to go in with sighted assistance, are absolutely scared out of their wits to use their high streets because curbs have been lowered or taken away or control crossings have disappeared, I would love to know about it, please, because the more and more evidence that we have, it all we can put that back to government, continually put it back to government and say this is not just one or two people speaking out, because we cannot and will not lose this fight. Because if we do, what you're facing is a future with a much less accessible urban environment. And these designers and architects, they're just going on anyway. They do want to learn, but we have to have more and more evidence. So please do send it in. If they can contact the National Federation of the Blind of the UK, that will give out the email here. But you can contact on my mobile. It's 07903 155858. Now, I will phone you back because I know most people don't like phoning mobiles. But if you get direct to me, I can ring you and we can take evidence down or email it to the Federation or leave a phone message on the Federation's landline.
And for more information about the Shared Space campaign and indeed the charity NFB, visit their website nfbuk.org. This is the Daily Connect. It's a forum and we're talking about all the issues that us blind people love to talk about, all kind of sight related stuff. This is the place to have that conversation and be open and honest. With me this week, David Hogg and Red Sail. David, of course, is the host of A Little Alternative, where he plays tunes that are... you don't play anything from before 1980, David, do you?
I have been known to in the past, but very, very rarely.
Right, because otherwise I'm not listening. And Red Sail, all about books. It's Read On with Red. He's a man of many words, and he's giving us some of them today here on the show, which is really nice. So good to have you both here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
So, do you guys take sugar? And what I mean by that is, what is it like when people ignore you in a conversation and talk to the person you are with? And how do you deal with that? David, let you go first this time.
This was maybe more when I was younger and I was going out with my mum by necessity rather than choice or obligation as it is now. And sorry, mum, if you're listening, which you probably are.
That's not nice. Poor mother. I hope you call your mother every day, David.
Yeah.
Good.
So, yeah, when I was out with my mum, you know, like I said earlier, it was when I was younger, so you're obviously going to speak to an adult more than you had a child, because, again, children are just little... children, they're no use. So it's not that people would ignore me, they just wouldn't speak to me because I was a child. Whereas now, I don't really find it a problem. Maybe I'm not as severely lacking in sight as some other people, but no, I don't really find it a problem. Red, I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the things that did start occurring more when I started using the cane, or needing a lot more guidance around. If I'm with someone else, yeah, quite often they get addressed before I do, at which point I just butt in and say, yeah, if you want to ask me, I'm not deaf as well as blind, which is quite a good line, normally gets people's attention. I really noticed it when I had the guide dog. There are actually people out there who talk to the guide dog rather than me, which I think just signals them out as being complete nutters and probably not worth talking to in the first place.
Can I just say, I saw this with my own wonky eyes in a place, and I wouldn't have believed that had I not seen it for myself. And it was someone who had been asking for, my friend who I was out with, she had a guide dog, and she asked someone for directions. The person, and I wish I could lie about this, I wish I could even just exaggerate this story, but if I did, it would be even less ridiculous. The person knelt down in front of the dog and started telling the dog, right, okay, so if you go up there, you go up the road and you turn left and then turn right, and the dog's licking his hand and licking his face and, you know, putting a paw up and all this, and he's saying, yeah, good boy, but listen. And honestly, if I hadn't seen that, and the best bit was he stood up at the end and said to the girl, right, there you go, that's you on your way now. And she said, okay, could you tell me? And she says, it's okay, I've told the dog.
It's just mad, isn't it? Yeah. I used to get that. I would be walking down the street and people would just go, oh, hi, Ella, aren't you a good girl? Where are you taking Red today? And you see, I'm thinking, this just isn't right. You know, I actually really started missing human interaction for the 9 months I had a guide dog. And so
that's very interesting, because it's often the opposite, isn't it? People talk about having a guide dog makes them more socially involved. People do come up and talk, but in your case, it was just to the dog.
Well, you know, maybe I should have taken the message that, you know, people were just tolerating me and just delighted that I'd finally come around to getting a dog. But I'm afraid I disappointed them and sent the dog back.
Shame.
The person who it really, really upsets is my wife. Though, actually, if people come up and start saying, oh, would he like a menu? Or, you know, shall I clear his plate now? She will just give them both barrels. She won't have any of it at all. And I don't know whether that's because she doesn't want to be seen as just being my carer, that she wants, you know. But it actually, yeah, that's a red rag to my wife. Is that the same with you, Stephen?
Well, it's an interesting one from my point of view, because I haven't experienced that, but I experienced something a bit different because my wife is visually impaired as well. So when we're out together, nobody knows who to speak to. Who do I speak to? Is there someone else here? Is there a dog I could maybe talk to? And, you know, you see people who don't really know. So it moves to a different... if you think about it in terms of hierarchy, it tends to work in a different way. So, okay, we've decided that we can't talk to either of the blind people because we don't know which one to speak to. So I'll move on to the next obvious thing. We've got a male and a female. I'll just talk to the male and I'll ignore the female. And that's what happened to us a lot.
Right.
I find that really interesting, how people switch gears in the way they do. They don't know how to communicate, so we'll just talk to one of them and hopefully one of them will understand. And be able to, you know, figure out between them what it is we're doing. I find that rather strange, but that's my experience.
It's a strange thing because it's like, you're not blind, you're not, you know, completely brain dead. So, you know, you can understand language, take it in and then action on it. So I don't really understand why people, and I think it might be people like trying to be nice about it, but they mm-hmm. don't know how to. So they just, it's a really strange thing.
But that's the challenge for us, isn't it? Because how do we, you know, on one hand you think, am I the idiot here? Am I the idiot? You know, and actually you wonder about that. But then you realise and you come to accept over a period of time that people are doing it with the best of intentions, but their approach might not be the right thing. And you don't want to, I guess we don't want to get to a stage in our lives where we're constantly berating the public for things they do. Because if you don't know, I mean, I don't know very much about what it's like to be deaf. So I don't know the right approach when someone's deaf. Now, I find it, I mean, obviously, I probably find it quite difficult to communicate with someone who's deaf because I can't see what they are trying to get across to me. Mm. But, it gets really complicated. So how much do we blame the public? How much do we try and educate the public, I guess?
I think, it comes down to that whole thing that there are not enough blind characters, blind people on TV and in other media where so the public doesn't actually know how to interact with us. They don't see that. Mm. And all it would take is for every soap opera during a 5-year period to make sure that they have even minor blind characters in the Queen Vic, for instance, in EastEnders. And standing up to go to the loo, Grant Mitchell grabs so-and-so by the grabs the blind character by the elbow and starts dragging them to the loo. And the blind character turns around and says, no, actually, just slip your arm under mine like this. This is the way to lead a blind person to the loo. And would you mind just waiting outside until I finished and you can guide me back to the table? And it's such a simple thing to actually give those messages in the TV dramas that we're watching, because we all take these things in slowly, so long as they're not battered into us every day. You know, it's a, oh, right, that's the thing. And I've never had to tell somebody twice how to guide me down a flight of stairs into the tube station. Yeah. You only do it once. The second time they come back and go, oh, I remember. You know, people are actually quite clever, but they just don't see it on a daily basis. Mm.
And if we've learned anything from this, is that some people are actually quite clever.
Yeah.
Exactly. And most people want to be helpful. And the 5% who don't want to be, well, they can sod off and go elsewhere, can't they?
So exactly. Yes. And that's a very good point. You know, some people are just not very nice people. Some people, the majority of people, are really decent people who just want to help. And that is really important for all of us to remember, even in our most difficult moments where we're frustrated ourselves about something. Whatever it might be, to try and be mindful of that, because we do probably come into more contact with the public than the general public do with each other.
And I think people, when they feel wrong-footed, get very defensive. And yeah. We all do, but, I'll always give somebody the benefit of the doubt and just go, well, it's not willful ignorance, it's just you've never been taught.
Interesting conversation continues on the forum with David and Red a little bit later. We'll be talking about public transport. Always a joy.
The Daily Connect podcast.
A new charity has been launched in the southwest of England to support blind and partially sighted people there, including young people, through special events. RNIB community facilitator Sophie Fox went along to meet Mark, who works for the new organisation, which is called Vision West of England.
We're a new charity that's been set up in the area to sort of plug the gaps in services, really across Bristol, Bath, Swindon, South Gloucestershire and Wiltshire. So really wherever there's a need for people to be helped with sight loss, anywhere we can find them in the areas we cover, that's what we're here for.
Brilliant. And can you give me a little bit of an overview of the services you offer at the moment?
Yes, so we have all across Wiltshire currently, because we're partnered with Wiltshire Sight. Vision West of England was stemmed mm-hmm. from Wiltshire Sight. So they already have their services in place, which have been running for, the charity's nearly 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
Wiltshire Sight. I think it's 100 years this year. So they have library drop-ins all over the area. They mm-hmm. have their resource centre and their centre up in Devizes. And they do run the drop-ins all over Wiltshire as well. That's being expanded into Bristol, and I'm hoping Bath quite shortly as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting Bristol sessions at the end of August, And I'm hoping to get bar sessions up and running by sort of mid to end August as well. Again, that's going to be library drop-in, so people can come along, chat to one of our sight loss advisors, and talk about anything they need to, really, as well as learn about anything we're doing, so future events and so on. So that's sort of the information, advice, support section, mm-hmm. which is all over the place. There's an organisation called Zoom Club. Sorry, an organisation, a part of the organisation called Zoom Club, which is run by my colleague Sarah. She's the family support worker. So Zoom Club is basically aimed at anyone from 0 to 19, I think you guys up to. Mm-hmm. And that effectively helps families and children with sight loss. So any child with sight loss is there. They have a sensory playroom. There's always events going on to help raise awareness of sight loss of children and helping children to understand their sight loss and how to become more comfortable with it. And also just to, I suppose, get out there and build a social sort of community with vision-impaired children. It's obviously important to ensure they've got the best sort of chance, start in life, as it were, as they can get. And that's been expanded into Bristol now as well. So the whole of Wiltshire site is expanding over to Vision West of England. The organisation's still going to be running, as it were, but it's going to be under the guise of Vision West of England.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to know. And so I've met James earlier. I've met him a few times now, actually. So he used to volunteer with RNIB as well. Can you tell me a little bit about his role?
Yeah, James is our resources and technology advisor or coordinator. He works alongside Lorna, who does the same job up in Wiltshire. And what they do is they can train people to use specialist equipment, whether it be technology magnifiers, it could be any accessible phones, synaptic smartphones, anything like that. They're capable and ready and able to train people how to use those and offer any advice with any kind of technical support with IT.
Ace. You've got a well-rounded package here, I think.
We're getting there.
Yeah. And when did you kind of establish yourselves as Vision West of England?
It was formed in April, if I recall. Mm-hmm. I wasn't actually working here at the time. I joined in June. So start of June, I started working here. But yeah, Vision West of England itself, I believe it was April when it was launched initially.
If anyone wants to get in touch with you and find out a bit more about Vision West of England, what's the best number to call you on?
So our Bristol office number you can contact me on is 0117 965 9754. Again, that's 0117 965 9754.
Thanks to Mark there for telling us all about the new charity Vision West of England.
The Daily Connect podcast.
This is the Daily Connect, and we are back in the forum now with our guests this week. David Hogg is the host of A Little Alternative here on RNIB Connect Radio, and Red Sail is the host of Read On on Fridays. Both of you actually are on Fridays on RNIB Connect Radio. Fantastic. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Good morning.
Now, listen, great to have you back on the show and back on this hour, because earlier we were talking about a whole wide range of different topics, but this time round, I'm actually going to hand this to David, because David's come up with a conversation topic for us in the forum this week, and it's all around trains and issues you've been having, David.
As somebody who travels on public transport a lot because, you know, too blind to drive, so with the National Entitlement Card up north of the border, we get myself and a companion, or somebody who asks nicely, free on the bus, but that doesn't really work on trains, particularly with ScotRail. I mean, it's supposed to. Different areas of the rail map have got different ways on how they deal with a visual impairment and a companion. Some don't charge you at all, some charge you 50% of the fare, some 75%, and it's a mess, and it annoys me.
Okay, and this is, you're referring to something that's quite Scottish, and you know, it's very specific to Scotland. What is the situation in London, Red, with train travel and bus
travel? Right, the situation in London is that I get something called a Freedom Pass, which means that I can travel free on the tubes and the buses, and that, as far as I understand, only gets me around. That said, I was recently coming through a tube station with one of my daughters, and she'd run out of money on her Oyster card, on her pass to get through. Mm-hmm. And the guard just turned around and went, "Oh, I think you get to travel free with your dad." Now,
I couldn't work out whether he was just being nice and charitable to her so that she didn't have to dig into her piggy bank to pay for the journey, or whether that's actually the case. So I'm now going to go off and look. If I'm travelling on the trains around the UK, then both I and my companion get a third off with a disabled person's rail pass,
right,
which does work north of the border, I know that. But I like the sound of your entitlement card. Maybe I should see if transfer up to Glasgow to connect radio offices up there.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one because it does seem there's a bit of a disparity around the different types of... I mean, I kind of thought there would be a very similar scheme that you get in Scotland. I live in Scotland and there is a national entitlement card, as David says. But yeah, I kind of thought that was a UK-wide. I thought there would be a version of that. But some parts outside of London, for example, I know there's schemes in Manchester and in some other cities, but generally, if you live in England, and I think in Wales as well, there are very little provision out there for travel.
Well, and the weird thing is, I know if I use my Freedom Pass in most cities, I can get on the bus and travel around absolutely fine. But then you go to smaller towns and the bus drivers just look at you as though you've got two heads and say, not on your Nelly, that'll be £2.50 to travel half a mile. And so, yeah, I mean, there is no joined up thinking there at all.
And it slightly annoys me that because, you know, we've got a national rail service, but they've split it into different councils. Like, you've got the Strathclyde Council, you've got up in the Highlands as well, and they've obviously not consulted visually impaired people who need companions to be with them about this when making these decisions. Because I was out with Mother Hog, that's a second mention for her, last week, and we were going from East Kilbride to Glasgow, so it was about a half an hour train journey, and there's only one train that goes in and out. So then we got to the barrier, and the man, who was called Malcolm, said, it's the most abused system in the country. I just don't understand why it works on buses, and it's been deemed that, right, you've got a disability, therefore you need a companion, so they shouldn't have to pay. But whereas on trains, that isn't the case in some places.
I think that the problem, though, starts at... when you have council borders.
I think that's often where you have issues.
You know, so for example, what you're talking about, you might end up drifting from one council area to another on a train, whereas on a bus, that's probably less likely because you do shorter routes. So perhaps on a bus, it's easier. But it seems in London, you know, although you have got that option read, it doesn't seem quite as fulfilling as the Scottish option.
Yeah,
if I can put it that way without laughing too much.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm not quite such a hot date, you know, if you can't travel free with me. But actually, I can't think of a better place to be blind because especially the tube staff, the underground staff, will meet me at the barrier, take me all the way down to the platform, radio ahead. I get on the tube. At the other end, I get met by somebody who will then take me all the way out of the tube station and actually usually across at least the first main road and set me on my way. Now, that is just above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah.
And means that I haven't fallen in front of a tube train yet. And it's a brilliant system. And okay, yeah, it might be more comfortable to walk hand in hand with somebody you love on the tube, in place of that, having the TfL system that they've got is just brilliant, and I wouldn't be without it. It means that London still feels like my city.
Well, I'd be very interested to hear what other people think about their travel provision in their part of the country, because it does sound as if there is quite a bit of disparity there. But very interesting topic. Thanks for bringing it up, David. And
no bother.
You're back on the a little alternative programme,
yes,
which I make it sound very old, but it is very new and modern, which means I know nothing about anything you're playing.
Apart from that one little, we had a little spat a while ago.
Okay, yeah, we fell out a little bit over the Casey Musgraves album that came out, but let's move on from that. There's no point bringing it up, David. It's not fair.
Are you not into these modern beat combos then,
Steve? I have no idea what that is. I was just saying to I said if he plays sequencers. If he plays some of the Carpenters, that would be great.
On 78.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And Red, you're back on Read On as well. Of course, it's Fridays at 1. You can listen to that. And it's a great show, talking about all kinds of interesting topics and books and talking to narrators as well. So thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for joining me on the forum this week.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for inviting me on.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Something for the weekend, and well, this is the opportunity to find out what is happening this weekend, which is always good. We're going to start in the cinema.
Yes. Do you like big sharks?
I do.
Well, after escaping an attack by what he claims was a 70-foot shark, Jonas Taylor must confront his fears to save those trapped in a sunken submersible.
There's a monster outside.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
My God.
It's a megalodon.
He's kidding, right? It's just one of those typical, big blockbuster type films for this time of year.
It's called The Meg.
The Meg.
Check local cinemas for AD listings. It stars Jason Statham, Ruby Rose, and Rainn Wilson.
Oh, sounds good. I mean, it does. It's one of those, you go along and you eat popcorn, you drink some fat juice, and it's all good. I like it. Right, okay, so let's talk about the theatre.
Well, it's the Edinburgh International Festival is on at the moment. Mm. And we have one called Blind Eye Spy, starring partially sighted comedian Tom Skelton. 2013, 2023, even post-Brexit, MI6's budget has been cut to the bone, but they need a new agent in Berlin. Out-of-work comedian Tom Skelton has seasoned abilities as an improviser, and he makes things up as he goes along, speaks ein bisschen Deutsch, and is registered blind, who'd suspect a blind spy.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Okay, all right. What else?
Well, performances of that one run to 3rd to the 14th of August.
Okay.
And then again the 16th to the 27th. It's at 10 past 7. It lasts for 60 minutes. And I will find out what venue it is in a moment. But if you look it up at www.edfringe.com.
Yeah.
And put in Tom Skelton, you'll find it. Now, if you're in Colchester, Babe the Sheep Pig have an AD performance tomorrow at 2:30 and a touch tour at 1 p.m.
Love a touch tour.
A sudden threat to the sheep flock gives Babe a taste for the thrills of herding, and his dreams are changed forever. I've never been in a touch tour.
It's quite good. I mean, it just gives you so much more. It gives you that sense when you're watching or sitting back and enjoying it. You kind of feel much more involved in it in some way. But no, it's really good. Okay, sounds good. What else?
And in London, Monster Calls at the Old Vic. There's an AD performance tomorrow at 7:30, and the touch tour for that one begins at 6 p.m.
Brilliant. Okay. Right, let's talk about books, because I know that's your thing.
Well, we'll do music first.
We'll do music first, okay.
We'll do music. Well, Jake Shears, the Scissor. I knew I was going to do that.
Keep telling people the show's live. Right, what was it called?
The Scissor Sisters frontman.
Yeah, I'm not saying it.
It's what's coming up that's thrown me not that. Released his debut album today. Here's a clip from his second single, and it's called Big Bushy Mustache.
Ah. Well, there you go. Do you know, it's when you hear the voice, you go, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
It's him. It's that guy from that band. doing that thing. Right, okay. So Jake Shears' new album out, new music out, which sounds quite good. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about books then, because that's your thing.
Yay. Well, last week we had a book on the show. We diverted the whole show of Read On to The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap, and we're doing it again this week. It's most of the show is dedicated to a new book called The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree, which came out a couple of days ago. It also came out in accessible formats, Braille, giant print, and in audio from RNIB Library. So it's available right now. It's based on the author's journey with sight loss. She's got Stargardt's.
Okay.
So the book is narrated by a 9-year-old girl who knows she's going to lose her sight in about 6 months. It sounds depressing. It's not. It's a very happy, friendly book. How can she still lose her sight and still be able to play with her cat, play football, and do all the things that she loves doing?
I like the sound of that because it's real. You know, it's those kind of real questions that we would ask ourselves.
And we go properly behind the scenes on today's show. Read On at 1 p.m. We will be talking to the author, Paolo Paretti. We'll be talking to the translator, as it was originally in Italian, the audiobook narrator, and the book's editor. Also, we've got RNIB Summer Reading Challenge as well.
Sounds good. Thank you, Robert. That is it for Something for the Weekend. And that's it for the podcast as well. Thank you so much for listening this week. Remember, the show is live Monday to Friday, 10 till 12 on RNIB Connect Radio. Join me for that if you can. Otherwise, join me for the podcast every night just after 5 on RNIB Connect's podcast. Search for RNIB Connect on your podcast feed if you haven't downloaded it already. Maybe you've found this from a Facebook link or a tweet or whatever. Well, subscribe to the RNIB Connect podcast, because then you'll get all of these shows every single day delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or computer. Have a great weekend. Catch you Monday.
The Daily Connect podcast.